Okay, and we're back. I'm trying to write a couple of emails off here to thank people. Thanks to Jeff in Santa Maria, California. We've got something I want to read that he sent in a couple of minutes. All right, give us a quick recap of which U-boat that was. It ended up in New York, and they decided, no, we're not going in here. We don't want to see Broadway. We don't want to see Times Square. We're going to Chile. Okay, yep. Which U-boat was that, and what were the circumstances, just to bring us up to speed?
Okay, that was U-530 under Oberleutnant Jerzy Otto Wermuth, who was a member of Shark Hunters, and he did not have sealed secret orders like the little fat guy wrote in his book, because there were no sealed secret orders. He was sent on a combat patrol with a full load of torpedoes to Halifax, but while he was on his way over, he got a radio message changing his area of operation, AOR, to New York. So he swung down by New York. He fired torpedoes at several freighters, and they were all duds. And then the order came that Germany had surrendered, and all U-boats at sea were supposed to surface and raise a black surrender flag and surrender to the closest Allied port. Well, they decided they were going to go to Chile because some of the crew had relatives in Chile, so they figured they could at least get a start on a new life. They were on their way down, they fired off all the rest of the torpedoes without detonators, just to fire them off and let them sink into the Atlantic. And they got way, way south in Argentina, past Punta Mogotes, wherever the heck that is. I'm looking at my Argentine map here. Mm-hmm. Oh, the Valdez Peninsula, Golfo San Matias, way down that far. And they realized they did not have enough fuel to make it around the Cape Horn to Chile because they had been banging into head seas and headwinds the whole way. So from that area south of Valdez Peninsula, they turned back and went up to Mar del Plata, which was the one of the large Argentine Navy bases, and that's where they had a big submarine facility too, and that's where they surrendered in July of 1945, 8 weeks after the war ended. And they were held there for a while and then handed over to the U.S. for interrogation. And about 2 weeks after they surrendered there in Mar del Plata, U-977 under Heinz Schaefer surrendered there. And that's a story all unto itself. I haven't done enough research into that, but that was a Type 7. He didn't have that kind of range. And In his book, the skipper, Heinz Schaefer, claimed that he saved fuel by running submerged for 66 days using the snorkel. Well, that just doesn't make sense, because when you're using the snorkel running submerged, you're running the diesel engines.
Of course, burns up much more fuel, sure.
Sure, because you have a lot of parasite drag that you wouldn't have on the surface. On the surface, your hull is very smooth and streamlined. Submerged, you got the conning tower sticking up, and you got anti-aircraft guns and all sorts of stuff slowing you down. So that doesn't wash. But at any rate, he surrendered in August of 45. And that crew was also taken prisoner. But both these submarines, U-530 and U-977, the crew IDs were all thrown overboard. They got rid of their ID cards, all their identity papers were gone. And so when they were shipped back to the United States, there was a total, I'm going off the top of my head here now, but the total number of submariners that were shipped back was enough to make three submarine crews. But they only had two submarine crews accounted for.
Shipped back to?
U.S. For, as mm-hmm. prisoners.
Right.
So.
So Juan Perón, I guess he had to bow to the will of the Argentine government, had to bow to the Americans to turn these people over.
Yeah. Remember, Argentina didn't even declare war against Germany until 2 weeks before Germany surrendered.
Right.
And they only did it on paper because Juan Perón was very right. pro-German, and he and once Martin
yes.
Bormann got there,
yeah.
he was very pro-money coming in.
Well, yeah.
He had tons of money rolling in thanks to Martin Bormann.
Which boat did Bormann come in on?
We're not sure yet. We're not sure.
There may be two others down there, correct?
Yeah, we've got an aerial photograph showing two boats sunk in shallow waters. We also have the story in our book, which was taken from what Don Angel gave me, that when they got, he claims he went with Martin Bormann on a submarine down to way, way south in Patagonia to Puerto Coig, C-O-I-G, and they all disembarked there, and that the skipper was supposed to take the submarine back about halfway between there and Buenos Aires. They were going to take it up there and scuttle the boat and live out their lives ashore or whatever. Well, about halfway up is a little harbor or a cove or whatever you want to call it, Caleta de los Loros, Parrot Bay, Parrot Cove, something like that. And there are eyewitnesses who have seen a submarine there at extra low tide. If the tide is low and the moon's in the right direction, there's an offshore wind, allegedly this submarine is breaking the surface.
Hmm.
Yet when people go there to find it, it isn't there. One of our members, one of our agents, so I won't use his name, was on a ship that went there specifically to find that submarine. And they went over where they thought it was. They got a big hit on their magnetometer, marked the spot because it was getting dark. They came back the next day, and at that very same spot, nothing. So, you know, is it there? I don't know. This one guy, excuse me, Michael Ivanheim, claims that there's some kind of aura around it or plasmoidal substance on board which makes it disappear when people are looking for it electronically. It's a little far-fetched, so I don't know. I'd love to go there and look for it myself, but you know, we're on a very limited budget. Nobody at Shark Hunters gets paid at all.
Seems to me a scan of that area wouldn't be difficult to do.
Exactly. And pilots have, you know, private pilots flying over claim they've seen it. And when they go back, but it's in a very, very remote area.
Now, this is a boat that Don Angel was on?
Could be.
Could be. There may be, okay, so in all of our conversations over these years, it seems to me that there may be two or three other boats, maybe more, that ended up down there. We don't know.
Right, because they weren't all toward the end there. They had the, and for years after, they had the black boats. That's a boat that is not identified.
Right.
And we know that the secret island Trinity was in operation under German control until at least middle of 1947. They were providing fresh water and food.
So there were boats out there.
Boats, yeah, and also ships and everything. They were all stopping there to get replenished with fresh food because they had herds of goats and herds of pigs and a lot of sea turtles. And they also, I've been on that island.
Took us there a couple times.
Right, thanks to the Brazil Navy. They were so nice to me. They took me out on one of their own ships, put me up out there in the VIP quarters.
Yeah, yeah.
And, letting me go all over the island. And we've got pictures of the remains of the radio shack that the Germans built. And those photos can be found on my website. Look under previous tours under Brazil. And so there were one of our members, who's now deceased, Carl Waldeck, he was telling me that he was a petty officer on a destroyer, a German destroyer, at the end of the war. And I, you know, after I got digging into it a little deeper and I had a conversation with him, I said, Carl, Germany had no destroyers at the end of the war. You know, what's going on? Well, he finally admitted that he was on a black boat, a boat with no number, no identification, that made three trips down to the Caribbean. And he was very quick to pop up and say, but I don't remember who was on board. Okay, Carl. So they were there, and right. There's no question about it.
Right. All right, here's another document. This is a declassified document that Jeff forwarded. And the one subheading, it's formerly top secret, reads Hitler in Argentina. It's a little hard for me to read this, so hold on.
Sure.
The word is L-O-G-A-T-E, logate, and that's, or logato. I think it's logato. The logato in Argentina reported to the Holy See, the Pope, in mid-September by bug, looks like bug, that information had reached him from a highly trustworthy source to the effect that Hitler was alive and in Argentina at an address known to the White House, which was planning to take decisive action to accomplish his arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you've seen that one, probably.
I've seen lots of them.
I'll send this one on down too. Now that suggests also that maybe Operation High Jump was an effort to originally go down there to capture Hitler. We've talked about this before. We don't
right.
know.
Nobody knows exactly what High Jump was for. We have our theories and suspicions, but that's all been pretty well buried.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Jeff. I appreciate it. Now, I've got one, and I found three in a British newspaper. I'm trying to get them posted for all of you. Let's see. Here's a
From this end, too, Jeff, thank you very much for sending those.
Of course.
This is for Jeff and for everybody who's listening. If you'd like a copy of our magazine, free, send an email to sharkhunters@earthlink.net and tell us you heard this show and you would like a copy of our magazine, and we'll send it to you electronically over the Internet. No cost, no charge, no strings attached.
Thank you. Did you... I had one. You've got four pictures of Adolf Hitler at the Eden Hotel, at the annex of the Eden Hotel,
right.
in 1946.
Seven. 47, yeah.
With Eichhorn and his wife.
Walter and Ida Eichhorn.
There's no way those pictures could be faked. They didn't have Photoshop back then. They were taken. They've been around since then. And it's clear that Hitler didn't go visit the Eichhorns during the war. So these had to be after the war. And there's just no question. You've been to the hotel. You stayed in the annex where Hitler stayed.
I stayed in that annex, yeah.
Yes. So were you able to send me your four? I wanted to put those up for our listeners tonight. And I don't think we got them.
No, I screwed up. I didn't send them. I apologize.
That's all right.
I send them in the next 5-10 minutes.
We'll get them up. Yes.
All right, let's see if I can do that.
So I'll keep talking while you see if you can find that. The other aspect of this that is very interesting is that we have and I've told this story before, I'll tell it again. An American P-51 ace was a very good friend of someone I knew pretty well. And this P-51 ace told my acquaintance friend that after the war hostilities ceased, his entire P-51 squadron was kept in Germany and rechecked out on DC-4 Douglas four-engine cargo planes. For what reason? The guy said he didn't know, that we couldn't figure it out. And these DC-4s, you can look up DC-4, DC-4, and you'll see what it looks like, were outfitted with long-range fuel tanks. And this is a true story. He said what the mission was is that we were flying German elite and loot from Germany under the aegis of the American military government there to Argentina and then returning for another load. He made two trips down there, round trips, and his squadron mates made many, many more. So just by virtue of these DC-4 flights, you say, well, gosh, that's a lot of Germans. Yes, and they came down by ship, and they came down in other means as well over time, railway down through Brazil and so forth. Look, this is a big deal. We think that ultimately, over the years, immediately after the war, perhaps tens of thousands of Germans, one rank or another, one persuasion, made it down to Argentina. There are whole little villages and towns down there that are all German to this day. The architecture is German. So, at, you know, 10, 20,000 easily. And that's a true story. So we have another means of them getting down there. Now, as we've talked on this program and shared with many of you listening, so please forgive the repetition, but we don't believe that Hitler, as I said at the beginning of the program, went down by submarine. Bormann, yes, but Hitler had another means to go, which was much safer, and we think it was the Ju-390, which is on the cover of the book, a huge six-engine transport. And Harry has found information that suggests that that aircraft is still with us and is being stored at a remote, hidden airstrip somewhere in the overgrown jungles of Paraguay, perhaps, maybe Argentina, we don't know. But somewhere down there in a hangar, this enormous transport is probably still there.
That's what we're told.
Now, we're going to put these pictures up, and when we get them up for you in a few minutes, I think you'll be pretty well convinced that...
they're on their way right now.
All right. Yes, it is Mr. Hitler and Mr. Eichhorn and his wife, Ida.
Damn, you got those awful quick.
Are they there?
Yeah, I sent them to you with a copy to James.
Okay. Let's see here. Okay.
Three of them.
All right. You sent three? Okay, I've got the fourth.
Okay.
Okay. Helma Harry just
To add a little background while you're pushing buttons there, the Eichhorn family, especially the wife, Ida Eichhorn, supported Hitler greatly financially during his run up in the political world in the 30s. They sent him a bunch of money. And when you visit the Eden Hotel, they have a letter down there from Hitler to Ida Eichhorn thanking her for all the money. And it was a big, very plush hotel. It started by a German back in the 1880s or 1890s, something like that, and then the Eichhorns bought it out, I think, in the 20s sometime. They had a big, long row of garages with all Model T Fords there for people who stayed there to use, and it was upscale, and people didn't go there for 2 weeks like they do now. People went there for the entire winter or like that, and there are photos on my website of that hotel during its heyday. Einstein stayed there. The Crown Prince stayed there. Lots of very important people stayed there. And there's a big courtyard. We were there in this courtyard. But we have a photo taken during the years just prior to the war and maybe even into the war years. Because they, of that courtyard, because that was the only place in the whole region, in that area of Cordova, that could get overseas radio broadcasts. And we've got photos on my website of hundreds of people sitting in this courtyard listening to Hitler's speeches that were piped in over loudspeakers there in the courtyard. Well, then after the war, the hotel fell into kind of disrepair, and it's a poor village, and they were trying to put together enough money to renovate the hotel, but it's going to take a ton of money. So they've got a small portion of it open, mm-hmm. and down there they have formal dinner dances 2, 3, 4 times a year in the grand ballroom. But the annex is still operating as a hotel. And I stayed there. My friend Martin, who's my guide down there, we stayed. I took the better of the two rooms. What the heck, I'm paying for them. I got the better room.
I'd say.
16-foot high ceilings, 12-foot high doors, the old claw-footed bathtubs. It's just exactly the way it was forever. And that's where Hitler and Eva Braun stayed for a short time in around 1947. So you get a kind of an eerie feeling in there.
I would say.
Living history.
Yeah. Hold on a minute. We'll take a break and come right back. Having a look at these photos from 1947 momentarily being put up right now, and we'll have a look. Let's see if they're up yet. Hold on. I'm sending you that FBI memo I read earlier.
Thank you.
You'll have that. Yeah.
And thank you, Jeff, for putting it out.
Indeed. Okay, let me see here. Hold on. And this... if you keep reloading, all right, they're not up yet. We'll have them up momentarily. Okay, so we have photos of Hitler in 1947. There is another photo of him, which shows him to be much older, that has the exact same ears, same facial structure. It's him, probably shortly before he died, a year or two or three, who knows. Then there's that one photo that has been in wide circulation on the internet that shows a man laying on his back in the sun, quite elderly, and it does appear to be, again, another photo of Adolf Hitler. So they're around, and not certified, not guaranteed, but they're very, very compelling and very interesting. Okay, let me take one more look, reload the home page. And see if these are up there yet.
I just reloaded the homepage. I don't see them.
Yeah, there. Look under your name. He's taken down the other set of photos and put up. No, he didn't. Not yet.
Okay.
So I'm wrong. What is he saying here? Oh, he's still working on it. All right, he's still working on it. All right, well, we'll get there. So anyway, okay, the point is, the Eden Hotel was one. There is another hotel that we've shown pictures of in Harry's last visit, which is located in southern Paraguay, which is, by the way, where the Bushes bought that 85,000 acres or something like that, right on top of the largest freshwater aquifer in Paraguay.
Good to have money, isn't it?
They've got their bolt hole already down there. Yeah. So there's that. Now, the hotel you went to was in southern Paraguay, and it's phenomenal because it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's a very,
well, that's for sure.
Very nice, very elegant hotel, which, according to Huldine Goebbels, was the location for God only knows how many meetings between the surviving members of the Reich that went down there. They would have meetings at this hotel.
Right.
And it's an extraordinary thing to look at. Now, you went in there, and was one waitress in there, you said, who you thought she probably was there for a long time.
Yeah.
Tell us
nice
that story.
Lady, very nice lady.
What did she have to say? Anything? What about her made you think that she might have remembered?
No, we just asked her. If you look down there to photo... Well, I'll sketch down real fast. Photo one, that's a drawing Huldine Goebbels made. Yes, she lived out the war. She did not die. That's another whole story. She made this sketch in 1962 of the entrance to the place. And you look.
Okay, we just lost Harry. We're going to get him back. Where he was directing us, and I'll direct everyone there to make sure, look under Harry's name, and you'll see two links. The first link just says photos, which are photos we're going to look at tonight. And the second link says Huldine and the Secret Hotel. That's the one he was talking about. So take a look at that. Are you there, Harry?
I'm back finally. I didn't do anything.
I know. All right. Well, that was the Spitlickers. Harry Cooper's stunning new discoveries of post-World War II German activity in South America. Load that up and let's just go through that real quickly. That's an astonishing group of photographs for a number of reasons. The first picture is a hand drawing of a young woman and someone a little older to her left and perhaps an older woman to the right. I'm left further. It's hard to know. It's a couple and it looks like a child perhaps, or a young lady. And they're walking up to a building that has four arches. You'll see it's the first picture there. And coming out of the archway are two people. One is holding up two hands, hello, like in greeting. Appears to be a woman, hard to know. That was drawn by Huldine to memorialize a visit to that hotel. And then you scroll down to the next picture. And there's the hotel, and there are some of the arched entrances. Now, that wall is original. I guess there were four archways side by side, or maybe her memory just...
Right, they've all been bricked up.
Yeah. And scroll down even further and look at the pictures of the hotel. This hotel has been there.
Photo three is the new entrance.
Yeah. That hotel has been there since 1945 or earlier.
Oh, long before.
Yeah, and in other words, its primary functionality for purposes that we're discussing occurred after 1945,
right,
where all these meetings...
Huge place. It's a resort, more or less. They got a couple of swimming pools. Of course, it was wintertime when I was there, which is not snow, but I mean it's like 30 degrees or so. But what got us going here, if you look at photo 7, the long walkway with the arched windows on the left side... we could peek through the curtains and see that it had been a meeting room. So I asked this lady if she would let me in through sign language because I don't speak Spanish. And she let us in. Photo 8 is inside the room. Photo 9, I mean, it's being used for meetings nowadays too, but if you look at number 10, those are the same old switches and circuit breakers that I've seen in other German hotels in Germany. So we asked her, my two friends there, photo 11, those are the two doctors that have done all sorts of research into Huldine Goebbels because they knew her down there.
Yes,
the guy is an eye surgeon, and the gal is an OB-gynecologist, and that's how they first met the girl they called Nora Daisy. That was the name she was using, Nora Daisy. And she's got this monster big scrapbook about 6-8 inches thick, full of writings, full of sketches she did, all sorts of stuff. And
it's her life story, basically.
Exactly. And
it's like 1,000 pages plus.
Oh, yeah. Because they wrote a book from this, mm-hmm. which is
1,300 pages.
1,300 plus pages, yeah. And it's Kindle right now. Nobody, you know, I keep telling Dr. Franco, nobody's going to publish a 1,300-page long book. It's going to be taller than it is wide.
Well, he'd have to do it, and you'd have to sell them for $500 each, which he probably could do.
It's solid history.
Yeah.
And we'll get to how we cross-checked this. There are so many bits of historic news that cannot be cross-checked from other sources, but this one is, and I'll get to that in a moment. You look further down, and that's me, photo 12, that's me walking along by where those windows are. This place is massive. I don't know how many rooms, but it's on so many different levels, not two or three stories high, but a whole building on this side of the mountain, and another whole building one level up with stairs all over the damn place. And if you look at photo 13, 14, what dummy did that? Oh, that's me. The jungle surrounds this place, and in the 1960s, I think it was, right after the kidnapping of Eichmann, there were 5 Mossad agents came here to grab Mengele, because this was his hangout, and they wound up with their throats slashed. So I'd say that was probably an unsuccessful attempt at kidnapping. Then on photo 16, that's room 28, where Mengele would stay.
Now, how do we know? Did the waitress tell you this?
That's right. And he would have either room 26 or 28. 26 was a single room, so if he was traveling alone, I guess. 28 had a whole row of beds in it,
uh-huh.
so if he had security or whatever with him, they gave him room 28. So then we scroll way down past everything. The very bottom picture, C2.
Right.
This is a friend of ours who uses the fictitious name of Michael.
Yes, Michael.
Right. You remember the story.
Oh,
when
yes.
He was born in 1940 in Berlin. His dad was high-ranking with the Reich, I guess with the military. And they were upper class. His mom was good friends with Magda Goebbels and also with Eva Braun. Magda Goebbels and Eva Braun were not best buddies because, as we have found out, Uncle Adolf was in bed with Magda quite frequently. And Joseph Goebbels wrote in his diary that it bothered him that his wife was having sex with Hitler, and there are thoughts that Holdein was fathered by Hitler.
Well, if you look at the picture, C1, and then if you look at pictures of Goebbels' family, and then look at Holdein, that's Holdein. Look at that face, and who does that face look like?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like Joseph Goebbels.
Right.
Not at all.
Right. So
that may well be Hitler's daughter.
We pretty well think it is. Then, when the war ended,
Michael,
there was great chaos in Berlin. Michael's dad disappeared. He told me where he got off to, but I don't remember. But his mom took him to their coffee plantation in Bolivia.
Uh-huh.
And his mother renewed the friendship with Magda Goebbels down there, because she had come down there with Holdein. And as they got older, the kids, into their teens, the mothers were trying to get the two kids romantically involved. romantically inclined, but Michael told me she was just a beast. And we found out later that Dr. Carl Vernet, the Danish SS officer, doctor, had been experimenting in Germany before the war ended. He had been transplanting monkey testicles into gay men to try to make them be un-gay. And so he was doing some other experimenting with Holdeen. God knows what it was, but she was not very good looking. Michael had no knowledge of these two doctors, and the two doctors never knew anything about Michael. Michael's story was exactly the same. He lived down there. Holdeen lived down there. Michael met with Hitler for a whole day in 1962. I think it was in January or February, whatever. Spent a whole day with him, and Hitler died just a few months later because he was apparently in pretty rough shape. Michael was riding his horse when he was about 20-ish on the family property. The horse threw him, knocked him out, broke his arm. When he came to in his bedroom, the doctor setting his arm was Joseph Mengele. So we've got the parallels, and there's no question about it, because they didn't even know each other. And so the doctors and Michael, they didn't know each other. And so Right. Their stories paralleled.
Right. Well, there's an interesting C1 is Holdeen and C2 is Michael.
Yeah.
And she doesn't look like a daisy, even though she went by that name. And
right.
Michael wanted nothing to do with her. That's a very interesting story. So Michael spent a whole day with Uncle Addie. Before he died, but Michael shut up. He won't talk.
Yeah, I know.
And, anyway.
Well, we have a mutual friend who has helped Michael tremendously because he's had a rough life here in the U.S.
Right.
And this friend has helped him tremendously. And last I heard, they've gone kind of silent for the last month or two or three, but they're writing a book about Michael's experience and how it intertwines with Holdeen and Magda Goebbels down there and with Mengele. And
so Michael is telling his story. That's the word.
That is what we've been told, yeah.
All right, this is another extraordinary piece of history that will otherwise be denied all of us. And we're not here blowing the horn for anybody in particular. We're here blowing the horn for truth and reality and to find out what the hell really happened. That's the biggest story. That's what history is all about. And it's a shame that we have to go through all this, and you've had to spend decades so honorably pursuing this, and to have anybody disparage you or steal from you is beyond despicable in my view, and I've said it to you before.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting. All right, go back to the homepage, reload the homepage, and rents.com, and go look down on the left side for Harry Cooper's name, and you'll see photos.
There we are.
Then you'll see Holdeen and the Secret Hotel, which we've looked at. And I put up another link, photos from Eva Braun's personal photo album found in the bunker.
Wow.
She took that with her as something to keep her company during those last days before she and Adolf were drugged and taken out of there. Had she not been drugged, she would have taken that with her. Had she not been drugged, she wouldn't have left that behind for the Soviets to get. All right, and look at the last link. Adolf Hitler at the Eden Hotel in Argentina in 1947. Open that link up, okay? Now, again, I ask you, if the icons are there, and Hitler hadn't ever been there before, and he certainly didn't go in the 30s or 40s during the war years, the only time he could have possibly been seated at a table with them is after the war. There's no other way to even debate it. It can't happen. So there's your first picture. Take a look at it. These are difficult to blow up, but in this particular picture, it appears that he has grown his mustache back apparently the level of confidence was such that he could affect the appearance he wanted to, unless that's a shadow under his, we don't know. But the second picture is a shot over his left shoulder. Look at the upper earlobe sticking out. That was very characteristic of him.
And his hands gesticulating
very,
like
very
that.
Very similar. And look at the look of Walter Eichhorn looking at him. Very interesting look. The next picture is clearly a side shot from the left, and it does appear that Hitler has his mustache back. If you look carefully, you'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Walter, and that's Ida on the left. I don't know who's directly across the table.
Probably Walter's brother. I forget his name.
They look similar. So.
Yeah, I was at their grave when I was there in 2015 in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, well, they have a beautiful big headstone, you know, for a family marker, but they don't have any relatives, apparently, so it's not attended, and it's starting to get shabby. But remember, cemeteries and funerals are for the living. The dead guy really doesn't care.
Not usually. I don't hear many complaints.
Mm-hmm.
There's another picture from this group I have somewhere. I've got to find it. I'll add it. It's amazing to me that in 1947, Hitler would allow photos to be taken. But in this case, I guess he did a favor for the Eichhorns.
Who knows? Who knows? But he was so far away from the real world. Cordova, up there in, what the heck, La Falda is the name of the town.
Well, this is 1947, so he still would have been in Bariloche. At Inalco.
Okay.
So this is two years after the bunker.
Right. And
this
right.
He looks
maybe
about
he was
right.
Traveling.
Yeah. Well, the hotel is located where?
The hotel is located in Cordova province in the town of La Falda.
So he went up to visit the Eichhorns.
That was what would be realistically assumed.
Yeah.
He, you know, that was so far away from the real world. Inalco, where he lived, was 700 miles southwest of Buenos Aires. La Falda, where this hotel is, was about 400 miles northwest. In a time when travel was next to impossible in those places. The rail lines didn't go all the way through, and just no airports, bumpy, lumpy roads at best. You had to really want to go where you're going.
Right, okay. Now, by the way, that photo album that you'll see in that third link in the data section under Harry's name, the photo album of Eva Braun, take a look at that, and that is pretty phenomenal. They just auctioned it off not too long ago, and it brought quite a bit. And it looks very much like something that that she would have.
Oh, the photo album, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You've seen those before. I sent them to you.
And this was all reported in the Daily Fail, as the Brits call the Daily Mail. They call it the Daily Fail.
Right, right.
And there was, what the heck, there was another, I don't remember where it came from, but somebody popped up with a picture of Hitler and a couple of fawns, baby deer. And they captioned it that it was a propaganda photo trying to make this horrible, evil man look humane by playing with the deer.
Right.
You know, they got to editorialize. They can't just say, here's a picture.
Oh, no, they have to. It is always an obligatory defamation, slight, some kind of a put down. There has to be.
Yeah.
They don't, that's playing the game. That's just the way the news works.
Of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center is going to pick up my quote here and say, aha, Harry loves Hitler.
Right.
No, I just don't.
Well, you know, there's another one that they have this Wikipedia, and if you look up, there's an entry on me, and I had nothing to do with writing it. We used to try to write a correct bio sketch, and within minutes it would be taken down and put up. It would be replaced by garbage like this up there now, which has really no resemblance to reality to speak of.
Yeah,
it says I celebrate Hitler's birthday every year on my program and website, and It's just, do you? Just
oh,
lies.
My goodness,
I
didn't get an invitation.
Sorry, I'll take care of that next year. But seriously, the stuff that's written about me online is lies, slander, defamation. And I have no question I've been victimized, as have many, by an MKUltra or an Intel operation, which they just do that. Anybody who's doing good work gets smeared, and I've been thoroughly smeared, but if anybody listens to the work I do and hears the voice of the person sitting here by this microphone, I think they can realize that they're all lies, distortions, and so forth. Hold on, and we'll come right back with Harry and take a look at tonight's photo collection after this.